Our new podcast sponsor is BarkBox.com/happy. Let me tell you how happy I am about BarkBox. A lot of you know we have a puppy named Walter, and he gets into everything if he is not entertained. BarkBox delivers a monthly subscription of 3 to 4 toys and treats to our home every month. And the best part is they tested them all on their own pets. So you know they're the best. And right now, my listeners get a free box with every 6-month subscription. Just head over to BarkBox.com/happy. Hopefully you'll be happy too. Hi, I'm Michaela, a psychotherapist.
Hi, I'm Savannah, not a psychotherapist.
Welcome to our podcast, Be You, Find Happy.
Real life conversations about life and the pursuit of happiness.
Today I got to sit with Cece from Little Hurricane Band, and aside from the fact that us reconnecting in the way that we did was incredibly synchronistic, she is a super inspirational woman. Not only is she a drummer, which is so awesome in a man's drumming world, but she also carried her child during their entire tour. In her belly, she was pregnant for the entire time, and she would walk out on stage up until 40 weeks and busted out on her drum kit. She is really amazing, and she's had such an incredible journey through the music industry and such an inspirational message in the way of staying true to who you are and being your authentic self in spite of the pressures from everyone around you and really just defining who you are in the way that feels right. And I can't wait for you to hear her perspective. And she's our first musician, like real life musician on the podcast. So awesome. The music in this episode was provided by Little Hurricane. We chat about her song called Give 'em Hell. Here you go. I always have to turn Savannah up and me down. And it's such a pain in post-edit. I'm sure you deal with that sometimes. Tell me a little bit about who you are.
Okay, so I go by Cece. I am the drummer in the band Little Hurricane, and I am also a mom.
Yes.
Yes.
And I want to talk in the future, like as we get going, about your new album that's coming out.
Yes.
But I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't at least reflect on like synchronicity and how crazy it is that you're sitting in front of me right now in the room with me. I'm going to share the story for people because it's just totally crazy to me. I don't think we've even really talked about it aside from in the workshop.
Yeah.
So my brother-in-law, Dan, he's a big music guy. And so he's like, we've got to go see this band, Little Hurricane. They're going to be playing in Orangevale at the Boardwalk. So we go to your concert, and he was like, she's so awesome, and this and that. And there was a starting band, and you were hanging out in the, like, just, you know, sitting at a table or whatever. And I was like, Dan, and I'm like, oh, and I'm like, there she is, you know, and he's all, shut up, just don't say anything, kind of a thing. And I went up and talked to you because you guys were from San Diego, and I had recently moved up from San Diego. So it, I think I just mentioned like, oh, whereabouts in San Diego have you guys played and blah, blah, blah. I used to have this all girl band, and we played at a couple of the same places that you guys have played at. And so fast forward now, all these years later, and Matt and I started listening to you guys because you were awesome. I mean, so freaking good. Like once, and so he's drug us to quite a few different, you know, shows, and they've all been very good. But when I was like, holy shit, she's the drummer. I mean, it was amazing. I could not believe it. And just your talent and Anthony and his talent too. I mean, he was playing like 7 different instruments. I mean, your sound was so full for just being the two of you, and you guys were having such a good time.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I remember that show for a few reasons. I remember the reason I wasn't in the green room when I was hanging out was the green room was covered in ants.
Oh, gross.
I hate ants. And as I was sitting there, I'm like, there's ants all over me.
Oh, no.
But it was a fun show. I think it was an all-ages show. So I remember some younger kids being there. And then another random side note I remember from that show, a guy had come up to me before the show, and he was like, oh, Cece, you really lost some weight, huh? And I'm like, what? Because I've been a pretty consistent weight. And he's like, you used to be like this, you know, making his hands look big, and now you're like this. And I was like, what? And so I called him out on stage and dedicated our song Bad Business to him. Like, this is to the guy who was commenting on my weight. Like, this is so not your business, man.
Yeah.
But it was a fun show. You know, I think that was the last show we've played in the Sacramento area. It's been a long time since we've played out here.
Wow. And it was such a great show. So where did you guys go after that? Where did your journey take you guys? Like,
You know, on that particular tour, I'm sure we probably went up to Pacific Northwest because that's usually the routing. And we put out a few new records since then, and we've gotten married and, you know, settled down, and we've left San Diego, sadly. But we never were really consistently in San Diego because we tour so often. Mm-hmm. So it would be like a combination of when we first met, we had our apartments, and when we went on our very first tour, we sold all of our belongings. Like, I sold my bed, I sold all my shoes, I sold everything, we sold everything we owned and packed it up into a trailer and said, we're going to go on tour, which was kind of unheard of because we didn't even know what that meant. We just knew, like, we'd done well in San Diego and it's time to bring it on the road. And since then, so that was in 2010, at the end of 2010. So we've been on the road pretty consistently the past 9 years.
Wow.
And just writing new records, and we just keep doing what we're doing.
So one of the things I read, and I think it was like a Rolling Stone article or something like that, was that you guys were putting the music first. You didn't want to make it about your relationship. You guys were all about the sound and what you were going on there, but everybody was constantly asking you guys, are you dating? What was that like, especially being in the music industry where...
Well, you know, when we first started working with management, we had, like, managers be like, you absolutely cannot tell anyone that you're a couple, which is really silly looking back. I think we were a little more green then and guided by what they were saying. And, I mean, we had one manager that wanted to make it look like I was dating a baseball player and, like, which is really silly because it's not about that, really. If we're together, what does that change the music? But it was kind of fun. We had this, like, secret undercover relationship that people didn't know about. And we'd go out and tour, and I'd meet girls in the audience that would be like, oh, he's so cute, your guitar player is so cute. I'd be like, go talk to him, you know, like, send him his way. And it was kind of fun for a few years that, like, it was our little secret and that we could really focus on the music. And during interviews, if people asked about that, we would just simply brush it off and go back to, like, our new record. But after a while, it's like, this is really silly. Our families were getting annoyed because they wanted to, like, post pictures on Facebook at Christmas when we're all together. And we'd be like, no, you know, it's a secret. And so we didn't actually go public with our relationship till after we were married. And most people kind of already knew, you know. But it's just part of our story. And I think it's kind of a fun part because we were able to do that and still stay faithful to each other. And, you know, our relationship is different. That we work together, we live together, we are together. When we tour together, it's like there is no time apart. And that kind of gave us almost a little bit of space where it shows we could be separate and not feel like, you know, if he's talking to a girl or I'm talking to a guy, we know that that's just like it's part of what we do.
Wow. There's so many things that are coming to my mind as you're talking about that, because I know from living in San Diego and having friends that were, you know, in the music industry and things like that, it was really taboo to have a relationship, and because they wanted to promote it as single so that you would get more listeners
or you'd have some sex appeal or something.
Right. Yeah. And that's definitely like this Hollywood thing that was big for a long time. And I've even noticed more recently on Instagram, some of the big influencers and stuff, they're doing acro yoga together. Or, you know, their whole thing, their hashtag van life is traveling in a van together. And now it doesn't seem to be so taboo. It seems people are saying, no, you're not going to tell me how to live my life. I want to be authentic to who I am. And you were authentic to who you were, but how did that impact how you guys were on stage? Did you have to, like, were there times when you wanted to be more flirty or huggy or something like that and you had to kind of...
No, I don't think we really changed on stage. We'll connect. We look at each other and laugh if we make a mistake or, you know, like certain songs will be written about me or written about us and nobody really knew that. But I think watching the show, people could always sense that there was a chemistry. Mm-hmm. And it is more authentic to just be honest.
Yeah.
You know, and to be who you are. And I don't think we ever were not. Like, we didn't obviously have me dating a baseball player.
Right,
that would be completely outrageous. And our friends and family knew. And then it was really fun when we got to tell all of our fans, too, like, oh, by the way, we just got married.
And you waited until you were married, which is, that's really special that you guys did it that way. Yeah. How was, what was it like when you went on the tour? I mean, and then you were suddenly thrown into full time together, working together constantly. What was that like?
It was really, for me, it was really challenging at first. I was more introverted back then. I really didn't like... Like, I would be the kind of person that would be, like, the last to come to a party and the first to leave. Or I wouldn't, like, spend the night... Like, if you drink too much, you know, I'd find a way home. Like, I wouldn't want to just, like, crash on someone's couch.
Right, right.
But the first tour that we did was... You know, I had sold my car, and so that helped finance it. But we had thought... We had thought we were doing this thing called a slow tour, is what we called it. So okay. We did so well in San Diego over, like, 6 months that we're like, well, if we spend, like, a month in Seattle... and a month in Portland, and we just mm-hmm. play, like, a bunch of shows, and we can build it up to, like, a mini San Diego, and then mm-hmm. go to the next town, and, like, we had this whole idea of enjoying the town while we were there, mm-hmm. and, like, creating this following, like, kind of slowly, and I knew nothing that there was, you know, radius clause. So if you go to Seattle and you book a show, well, they're not going to want you to play another show within 30 days of that show.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Because... you know, then that would take away from the show that you're playing. And right. I didn't also know that you can do really great in one town and try and go to a new town and they're going to say, well, you haven't played here. Like, right. It's going to be really hard to get a show.
Right.
So
right.
it was more challenging than we thought in that way. And it was hard, but it was still my favorite tour. When I look back, like, I mean, we'd stay... We finally set the standard that we wanted to stay in hotels with only indoor hallways because... You know, and then there was points where we were just crashing on someone's couch for like a week. And like what we ended up doing, we went up to Portland and Seattle and we rented a music recording studio during the week, like a 9-to-5 when all the other bands were working. So we got it super cheap and we recorded our record on the road. And we used our time that way. And we did like San Francisco, Portland, Seattle. And we'd saved all our money to go down to a music festival in Austin called South by Southwest. Which is, it's the biggest music festival in the U.S. because there's like tens of thousands of bands playing in Austin all wow. at the same time.
And Austin is just kind of notorious for being a music hub.
Yeah.
Even more than like Nashville or I think.
Yeah. And this particular festival, all of the music industry comes down to find the new bands, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we had thought like, well, if we can get ourselves to South by Southwest, mm-hmm. then, you know, we can make it. And we got ourselves there, and I was doing our booking, and we got denied by the festival. We oh. were not allowed to play their official shows.
Oh, no.
And so I booked us, I think, 4 or 5 shows over the week that we were there, and I had never been to Austin. I did not realize that those shows were not in the heart of the city, and that nobody leaves the heart of the city. Like, right. you know, they're going where they can walk, because every bookstore, every bar... every coffee shop has a band playing. So mm-hmm. you're not going to leave 6th Street, essentially. And it was hard. Like, I felt like the smallest fish in the biggest possible sea. There was bands with, like, full camera crews following them around. Wow. And, like, you know, like, people just putting headphones on your head as you're walking down the street being like, listen to this record. Everybody's trying to, like,
wow.
get this opportunity. And at the time, gas was over $5 a gallon. Mm-hmm. It was like it took all of our money. We had exhausted all our funds just to get there. And we have this footage of me crying in our trailer. I'm drinking, like, a Macallan 12, like, this old bottle of scotch. Like, we're paying our dues. And it was right before a show that we had played in a taco shop for... When we started playing, there was a lady and her crying baby. They left. And then there was no one. And then the sound guy came. And so then there was one guy. And then a couple of my friends came. But that, going there, we ended up... All our friends were there from San Diego. They're like, let's just go party and drink. There's all these free parties. And we're like, no, we're like out of money. We're not going to just give up. So we went to Kinko's and we printed these little flyers with our shows and we burned a bunch of CDs and I went down on 6th Street where, you know, everybody was. I had this captain's hat on and handing out CDs and just handing out our flyers and we ended up in a Witch for lunch and I see these guys with a full itinerary and they look like industry guys. And so I walk up to them like, hi, I'm in a band called Little Hurricane and you probably won't make it to our shows, but at least look us up. We have some videos online and look us up. And, you know, we left there with our heads hung so low. Like, what are we going to do now? And a month later, I got a call from a record label in New York, and he said, I'm looking at your flyer. You handed it to our radio promotions guy, and we want to fly you to New York for a showcase. And we flew to New York, and we played with Of Monsters and Men. It was their very first U.S. show. They were brand new then. And we played for a huge record label, and, you know, from there we got our attorney, we got our manager. When before we had even gotten on the plane right home, we got an offer from Austin City Limits, from my dream agent that I had wanted, I'd been writing for months. And she's like, I just heard of you guys from the showcase that you played. And so it worked out. Like
it all started to unfold. As you're telling the story, I'm getting chills just thinking about, one, your passion. It's like radiating off of you for what you do. And then second, the fact that you just didn't give up. You guys kept going. I mean, hearing you say gas was $5 a gallon and we had no money and we're out, you know, I'm just like feeling that sense of loss that you must have felt, like, I can bury my head in the sand and just call it. But you didn't do that. You guys still just dug and found a way. And I mean, those flyers are ultimately, that Kinko's flyer is ultimately what got you there. And what a journey to get to that space, to have the courage to just go walk up to a guy at a sandwich shop and be like, listen to us, please. Yeah. You know, that, I mean, I think for so many people, they see people doing it. They see people that have achieved the level of success and you think, oh, they look at them. That's so easy. They made it, but they probably didn't. They probably had a very long journey that started with a lot of letdown.
Yeah. Well, and that flyer was one of hundreds that we handed out. And, you know, 8 years later, we're still, like, fighting. We're still, you know, trying to be heard. And, you know, like, we, after that, we did have, like, a full, like, month and a half where we didn't pay for lunch or dinner because we had all these managers and record labels just, like, descending upon us that everyone wanted to sign us. And we thought, oh, wow. And then you think, oh, this is it. This is, like, the big opportunity. Mm-hmm. But for us, it really was, I mean, it was part of the story and we're still climbing, but it wasn't this huge, it was a huge shift that we decided, well, now we can, but this is our job. Like, we can make money, we can do it this way.
Yeah.
But the kind of record label deals we were offered were stuff where we'd have to sign away rights to our music for eternity and perpetuity, and we wouldn't do it. And I think because we were young, but not that young, and we were green, but not that green. Mm-hmm. Like, we could have maybe picked an easier path towards fame, but not, in my mind, success. Mm-hmm. So now, however many years later, we own all our records. We do a lot on our own. But I think we're much more successful because we're not, our kids are going to be the ones that inherit our music and our songs and our catalog. And we've maintained control, but it's not, it hasn't been the easiest path.
You know what's interesting, though, when you're saying that, I think about people who probably took the easier path and sold out, quote unquote. And what's sad about that is that then who they are gets redefined as well in the light of the label or whatever. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but I think that you lose some of your identity in that process, like you're describing. It might have gotten us to fame faster, but at what cost, at what loss? And I think that's incredible that you guys are still so raw and still who you are. One of the comments that I read, oh, and this was Rolling Stones, they said you were a bewitching beauty. and I totally agree with that. Like, you just have this super bohemian spirit about you, and I love that no record label defined you into like a pop star or a whatever they might have wanted to shift you into, and you still are getting to radiate who you are.
Yeah, because we might not be a band anymore if we had gone that route, you know.
Right
We've been able to, like, most bands don't last this long, right? Especially new bands. So I'm really proud of our path that we're on, but it's scary. It's definitely scary, but that makes it exciting, you know?
So you could have had a one-hit wonder or whatever and then petered out, where here you've continued on.
Slow incline.
Slow and steady, yeah. So what does that, look like for you? Oh, you know what? Before we go on that path, I want to ask you about this because, so you toured the country, you did Lollapalooza, and one of the things that you kind of talked about is that one of the only songs, and maybe now you have more, that you sing on is Give Them Hell.
Yeah.
And you in kind of light of being introverted and stuff, you didn't want to hear your voice and you didn't want to sing. How did you overcome that? What was all, how are you doing that?
It's still a challenge, and I still sing on some songs. You know, I've sung on a few more, but it's hard. As a drummer, I tend to hold my breath when I play, which is the opposite of a good singer. And I was trained as a drummer from a kid on. I didn't play the piano, unfortunately, or different things where I would have a sense of pitch. But it's just a matter of, like, this is my voice, and it's not going to be perfect, but, you know, my husband loves it, and people that hear me sing say it's okay, and, you know, it's definitely, I feel like you're most vulnerable when you're singing. At least I feel most vulnerable to be, you know, like, trying to project my voice into a microphone, and then it gets projected into huge speakers for, like at Lollapalooza, like, thousands of people, it gets magnified. And I just wanted to keep it so small because I felt so insecure about it. But that made it sound worse. You know, just trying and just, like, pushing through that is better than trying to, like, somehow secretly hide it. Like, for a while, I would try and, just sing really quiet or shy away from the mic or... But, you know, it's my voice. It is what it is, and love it or hate it, like, I've got to just accept that it's part of me, so...
It's interesting to me how many people squash their voice in so many ways. I know even for me, when I'm out of alignment with my true self, it's because I'm not speaking my truth. I mean, I know that's not singing, but you know, that withholding because of fear or that you're afraid of how it's going to be received or judged or whatever. And even the podcast has been a big learning curve for me on just say it. And if somebody gets pissed off, oh, well, you know, kind of thing. How did you overcome it? How did you push through it?
I think, like, listening to yourself on recordings helps. You know, I think just with the more I did it, the more it's like, well, I'm just going to keep doing it. And you know, I don't know if I've fully overcome it yet.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's part of what we do. So I feel like I have to do it. And I've always wanted people to be like, you should sing more instead of like, you should sing less. And so we just keep it like, you know, it's not like constantly there because my husband has such a beautiful voice and he played or sung choir in high school. And, you know, he works as an audio engineer and very much understands pitch and tune. And when we first started recording, I would get in the vocal booth and he'd be like, well, you're a little flat, so try and sing higher. And I would just, like, raise my body higher, like, is this helping? Like, and inevitably, I'd end up in tears every time because I'm like, I don't know how to do it. But I've found what's really helped me more than anything in recently is I understand notes. I understand a scale. I'm like, when I play the drums, for me, I wish that I could say it just, like, radiates out of my soul and I've just got this rhythm, but I don't. I need to map it out on paper and write out the beats written into music form.
Wow.
And okay. If I can write my vocal parts in music form, even though I don't know what those notes are when they're landing on the scale, I can see where this one's higher than this one and this one's lower. And that's how my mind works in order to understand, like, okay, this is how the melody goes. Because if I just hear it, I can't repeat it. But if I can see it and visualize it, that helps me tremendously.
Yeah. And he does have such a great voice too. He must be such a great mentor and a great coach.
Yeah.
You guys seem to make a really good team.
Yeah, we balance each other out. For all my lack of experience I had starting the band, he had a tremendous amount of experience. Like, when we had met, I had posted an ad on Craigslist and I was looking for a guitar player and I put this little video of me drumming and I got a bunch of really creepy, weird responses.
I bet.
I didn't respond to any of them. I'm like, whatever. And he wrote again and my ad was kind of over the top that I'm looking for someone to be in a duo with and like they have to have sex appeal. I want panties thrown on stage. Like, you gotta be good, you know? And then in his second response, he had said, like, Christina Aguilera kissed me on the cheek and Gwen Stefani, I don't know what, like, with all these pop stars that he'd work with. And I did not believe him at all for a second. I was like, whatever. And so I wrote him back, like, okay, we'll come into this bar where I'm working and we'll see if you're telling the truth. And he was telling the truth. He's recorded a lot of really, really big artists and helped them tune their vocals. Wow. And he worked for the Grammys for many years, recording the live stream of the audio. And
so he was an audio engineer before he joined the band.
Yes.
Wow, that's what he did in San Diego. Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, he worked out of L.A. a lot. But, yeah, he would do, like, the big TV productions. Mm-hmm. Or he did the Coachella film when Coachella had a film. Or working mm-hmm. in the audio trucks that are recording live audio. So he was really great at that. And I had no idea, like... And even when he told me that, I was like, but how do you pay your bills? And he's like, that's how I pay my bills. I'm like, people don't, like, make money off of music. Like, you're lying. But I found out pretty quickly he was telling the truth. And he's a pretty humble guy. So for him to say all that stuff, he was just really like, come on. Like, please. I've got some experience. And it worked out because he thought I had an energy that was really fresh, that, like, I wasn't, like, weathered and kind of just put off by the industry, which I wasn't because I didn't know how it worked. I'm a little more right. that way now.
Right.
But it was a good balance where he kind of had experience knowing how things really work behind the scenes, and I had none. So it worked. I had cooked for many years. I went to culinary school.
Oh, wow.
And it was the wrong fit for me. I think I cooked for a total of 7 or 8 years in Chicago and San Diego. And I had finally gotten laid off from a cooking job in San Diego. And that was it. I was like, I'm not going to go back to another kitchen. Because I just didn't, for me, the environment was all wrong. Mm-hmm. Like, I hated working in kitchens. Just, yeah. I love to cook, but it's a very hard job. And it's high stress and not a lot of women and not a lot of gratitude and not a lot. It's just not, for me, it always felt like I was working in a locker room. Like, just with a bunch of dudes talking about their sweaty balls. And like, I just... I would get mad and I would butt heads with a chef and mm-hmm. I'd leave with my middle fingers up like, F this place, I'm done. And then I just go to the like restaurant down the street for another $10 an hour. And yeah. I had gotten laid off from the Ivy Hotel in San Diego, which at the time was like the biggest, fanciest, most expensive hotel. Yeah. Yeah. And I was making, I think, $14 an hour and mm-hmm. I was one of the top paid cooks. So they let me go. And it was the best thing that could happen because I'm like, okay, I'm going to not do that anymore. And so I went and I bartended because I knew that bartenders made a lot more money than cooks. Mm-hmm. And so I went to bartending school and I got a job in North Park. And then that was what held me. And that from that job, I was able to afford my electronic drum kit, which I had bought to play at home just to see if I could still play. And then from there, I posted the ad. So it was
because you played as a kid.
Yeah, I played in school band.
What age did you start drumming?
I was 10.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's crazy. What a neat journey. My husband always says he wants to be a chef. Like, he's a really good cook, but he blows up a kitchen. And I'm like, you would be fired. Like, you make such a mess. He's like, no, I would have sous chefs and, you know, cleaners. And
it's
I'm like,
it's many years till you get to the sous chef, but you do have dishwashers. I do the same thing. My parents would hate when I cook at home because there's no dishwasher to come and grab your pots and pans, and I just make a mess.
Literally a tornado. Like, I don't know how he does it. There is flour in places that I should not have flour. But he's really good. He's an incredible chef, incredible cook. And I sometimes think someday he'll probably have a restaurant. Like, I think ultimately that would be a
nowadays
dream
for him. It's different. Like, they didn't have food trucks back when I was cooking.
Right.
But they're so cool because you can start a business for $50,000 and not have just that overhead of running a restaurant.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad there wasn't food trucks because I may have gone that route because I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I always wanted to work for myself.
Yeah.
But I knew that I didn't want to run a restaurant because it's really tough.
I don't think my husband would deal with the people very well. Like, I mean, he's a good people person, but I think if he was getting a lot of complaints and stuff, he probably would... He's about the food. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He wants to make good food. He probably wouldn't deal well with that stuff too. But he does run a business, and he does very well with that, but he doesn't have to deal with the general public, and that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah, well, and everything's a liability. The food could hurt somebody,
yep,
your staff could be being sexually harassed.
Right,
you know, like,
right.
it's a lot of pressure and very little profit margin. It's tough. And the people that I cooked with and went to culinary school with now are finally getting their executive chef jobs and getting the recognition that, like, I had always felt like, oh, God, this is just like I'm cooking all day and you only really get feedback when you make a mistake. You could do 200 plates right, and that's, you did your job.
It's chicken was overcooked.
And then you get yelled at, and then it's like, this isn't worth it.
Right.
But there's this massive juxtaposition for me now where, like, when I go to work, people, like, clap every 5 minutes.
Right.
Like, it's crazy. Like, I will never, like, it will never be lost on me. I will never take it for granted that, like, wow, after I can play for an hour, people are coming up and, like, wanting an autograph or shaking my hand, and like that's amazing. Like, so many people deserve that
in
their jobs.
What a cool thing that is. I never thought about it like that, but you're so right. You know, that kind of gratitude. And I do try to leave like positive Yelp reviews for just that reason. Yeah. You know, if somebody does a great job, I try to like put it up on the Yelp or whatever.
It makes a difference.
Yeah. So in talking about kind of reflecting back on Lollapalooza being such a big venue and stuff, how do you deal with stage fright? Is that a thing you have anymore, or do you not really get that anymore doing it so long now?
Well, Lollapalooza was interesting because we had played so I'm from Chicago. We had never played in Chicago before. And we had played the day before at Lollapalooza on the kids' stage. And we're not a kids' band. Our record was called Home Wrecker. You know, like, we're kind of like a dirty blues, like, in-your-face band. And they're like, whatever, just play your normal set. And, like, the guy before us playing had, like, everyone be on your surfboard and you're a shark right now and all these movements. And it was all for kids. And then we just get up there and we play our set. And we had a horrible review that night, just tearing us apart. And they said my husband looked like a Gap model on stage and that, like, my drumming was no good. And I woke up just completely losing my mind. Like, now we're about to play on the real stage and, you know, like, it's going to be horrible.
Yeah.
It's going to be awful. But, you know, it's just a matter of, like, I can do this. Like I've always had this saying in my head, like, jump and believe you'll grow wings.
Mm.
And, like, I still have to tell myself that, but, like, I'm just going to, it's like, I'm just jumping in the water. And the next day we had, like, a most amazing set and it was perfect. And, like, it had rained all morning. So I'm like, this is great. No one's going to be there. Like, no one will be there. It'll be perfect.
You're going into it thinking, like, no one's going to hear me. It'll be perfect. Fine. I won't have anybody.
And then, like, the clouds cleared, and we ended up on a stage for a band that had canceled last minute, so we were on a much bigger stage than we expected and a much better time slot.
Oh, wow.
And it was great. And after that, like, you know, I'm going to make mistakes on stage. I'm going to feel dumb here and there or say something I regret or do something wrong, but, like, if you laugh and you smile and you have fun through it, like, people will sense that, and nobody's really going to judge you that hard. Like, they don't. They're not as hard as the critic from the kid stage.
Well, and the funny thing is, like, I think that you probably notice your mistakes a little bit more than anybody else would, you know? And it's interesting when you were talking about even, like, your voice, how much... it's acceptable now to just, I mean, even if you sing terrible, it's okay. Like, YouTube successives have come from these people that are terrible, like, by industry standards, but they're being them, they're doing them, and it works out. I saw this one girl, and I'm forgetting her her last name now, but she was on SNL, and she sings, oh gosh, what is that song? It'll come to me, but Leave the Lights On, I'll Leave the Lights On. I'm forgetting her name, but anyway, and she was so out of pitch and so off tune, but she was dancing on the stage and just feeling it and having a great time, and I'm like, she is awesome.
Yeah.
But the reviews the next day, it was kind of rude. I was kind of shocked at how critical people were, because I saw it as like, man, she's just having a great time. This is the best day of her life right now, you know?
Yeah.
So that balance between, people are judgy. They are, you know?
And yeah.
It's an interesting, like you said, juxtaposition when you do have these critical people, but then you also have these super loving people and play for them. And and finding that space and that way to just focus on that. Imagine that's really hard sometimes.
Yeah, well, it's right. It's not the critic who counts. I mean, that quote I think about constantly. And really, it's about the music and about the fans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your fans aren't going to judge you if you have a bad night. Like, yeah. They're still going to come back. And, you know, the industry might, but they can't do it. If they could do it, if the guy writing the, you know, the review the next day could do it, then he would be. But he can't. So it's easier to sit back and judge.
Yeah.
But they don't really matter. And I think on that same hand, like, what we always try and say is, like, yeah, you might go on, like, I don't go on our YouTube at all. I don't read the comments. But, if I have, or when I have in the past, it's like either people hate me and think I'm horrible, or they love me and think I'm way better than I am. So you can't trust either end. Like, neither end is true. So right. What's the point? Like, I'm not going to let those people saying that I'm so great let it go to my head, but I'm also not going to let the people who say I suck and should go back and take drum lessons, like, oh well. Like,
define you. Yeah. And I think that's true even for people who maybe aren't, who are listening to this podcast, who aren't even, you know, musicians or whatever, kind of finding that space in between what people say that sing your praises and people like your mom, yeah. And people that are really hard on you and are judging you. And it's super hard for me. I know we have a YouTube that's a fishing channel, mm-hmm. and I've edited videos to be funny and cute. And then some guys are like, why the hell did you bring your wife on your boat? That's your problem, you know? But then you have people that are like, that's so cool that your wife sleeps on your boat with you, you know, that yeah. you take her fishing. So I've seen that, but the funniest story that we have. So I had an all-girl band I mentioned to you.
What was the name?
Sky.
Sky? We were okay. And Sky, what did you play? Girls.
Bass. I play bass.
Okay.
And so I started in the Bay Area, and I, when Craigslist was just for bands, and put together this all-girl band, and I was kind of also shocked by none of you can be dating, or you're not going to have a successful album because you need to be, you know,
available,
appealing to, yeah, yeah. all that. We went through, jumped all those hoops, and I kind of got disgusted by the whole, this is what you need to look like, and this is what you need to wear, and this is how you need to be. But we were getting some pretty big shows. We opened for Smash Mouth.
Oh, nice.
It was pretty big. It was like a festival in a park. And I think it was the nature of Smash Mouth's fans, because it was an awesome show, and we had a killer time, and everyone was clapping and cheering. It was just a ton of fun. And then we ended up at this festival in Hollister, which was a motorcycle rally. And that was not really our fan base, like not our style of music. At that point, we were pretty poppy, like poppy rocky. And so we were like, well, we're going to have to do some covers because that, you know, this audience is not necessarily, we'll mix them in.
Yeah.
And so we chose to do Sweet Home Alabama. And, you know, that guitar riff is so identifiable. And so we started it, and the whole crowd was like, woo! And then my guitar player fucked it up.
Oh, no!
She just got nervous and lost it. And I swear it was like crickets. And then people were like, boo! Oh. And it was like, oh, that just sucks. So, but it didn't get us down. We kept going, but it's interesting, that dynamic. It really is, and how either people love you or they hate you. And
yeah, it could turn on a dime.
Really, it can. And that was one case where, you know, I say most people aren't listening. They don't pick up on the little things here and there, but they definitely picked up on that. Yeah, we were just laughing, and we're like, you know what? Let's just go drink some beer and have a good time. And
yeah,
and it ended up being a fun day and a learning experience. But man, it was rough.
It makes for good stories.
Right. Oh, yeah. For sure. In hindsight.
Yeah.
But we did have some groupies that followed us all over, and it was...
Oh, that's awesome.
I was like, wow, it's crazy to think they like us that much. You know, I don't even realize that we're that cool. And I still think looking back, I'm like, oh my God, what were we doing? Because we were trying to like fit into that mold, you know?
Yeah.
And if we had just been who we were, we probably would have had a lot more success than trying to fit that stereotype.
Yeah. Well, it's hard where you can look everywhere and be like, well, that's successful. And so maybe that's why they're successful, you know?
Right.
But usually the most successful people are the people that are just, they're doing their thing. They're the most authentic, and they mm-hmm. create the new sound or,
yeah. You know, so that was one of the things that I noted on here, was how you guys have stayed so true to who you are, and your style is so different and so neat. And I don't even know, I mean, you described it kind of bluesy, but you almost have like this 70s vibe too, or like a 60s, 70s vibe with the retro feel. I mean, what? How do you describe you to?
I mean, that makes sense. We grew up, both of us grew up on our parents' music, so like a lot of like the Beatles and Bob Dylan and James Taylor. So I definitely tend to listen to that kind of music. Mm-hmm. We call it dirty blues.
Yeah.
You know, and we have like our last record, we put a kind of different song on there that we had a record label and they picked that as the single, and people, the internet tore us apart. Like, they've changed their sound, which is really hard when you've been a band for a long time. If you explore and experiment, sometimes right. people want to say, well, you're different now. But you have to evolve. Mm-hmm. But we've kind of stuck true to, like, you know, like the grimy slide guitar and like really yeah. crunchy guitar tones. And we uh-huh. are just drums and guitar, so it's going to be pretty raw. But yeah, we call it dirty blues, but like, we just submitted our record. We put it in the alternative rock category because, you know, some people hear the word blues and they think that you're going to sound like this like 12-bar blues
oh, sure.
band. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. a lot of times that's where we end up with our wrong crowd. When we end up like on the bluesy blues festivals, right. we played a blues cruise once, which was this older crowd,
right.
a much older crowd.
They were like, whoa, what's happening?
Yeah, they yeah. were not the, they yeah. weren't, most of them weren't up by the time we were playing at 10 p.m. But, you know, I'd like to think that we'd fit more in like an alternative or indie rock category,
yeah,
but
yeah.
music just keeps evolving and changing. And over the course of our career, it's gotten very electronic for a while and very mm-hmm. poppy. And we tend to do better like in Europe, where they still want that like kind of Americana or rock
uh-huh.
sound,
yeah.
but it comes and goes in waves. So we never know, like, well, maybe with this record, it will be the one that like can take off mainstream in the U.S. because
mm-hmm,
we have our fan base, but we're not mainstream. There's more people who haven't heard of us than have heard of us.
Yeah, I love your vintagey sound. It's like you said, like a grungy blues or something
yeah.
like that. And I love that sound. It's really great. It's awesome.
Thank you.
Do you have a favorite song?
Oh man. Well, I mean, Give 'Em Hell, that one was one of my favorites because
yeah.
that's one where I wrote a lot of the lyrics.
Yeah.
I definitely have some favorite songs off our upcoming album. So our new record's called Love Luck, so that will be our first single, and that's my favorite one so far.
On the whole EP or whatever.
Yeah, yeah,
is
the
that
whole
what
record.
It's called?
Yeah, that's the title track, so.
And how, when does it come out, your new album?
August 9th. No
oh,
one
wow.
knows that yet. We haven't announced it to the public, but here it goes. August 9th.
Oh, no. Is that okay?
No, that's awesome.
Bleep it out.
No, it's totally fine.
Wow. So that's coming up really soon. So what is it going to look like for you guys when it goes out and launches? What's that going to look like?
We're doing a very, very West Coast focused tour this time. Normally, we tour the entire United States and most of Europe. But for now, we're just focusing on the West Coast. So we're focusing on our favorite markets and markets that are easy to get to, because now that we're parents, it's a lot harder. I'm not going to drag our kid to, you know, like the last record, our tour started in New York. So you're driving for 4 days just to get to the first show, and then you're working your way all the way across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just not going to be doing that this time around. So we will hopefully get to New York and Chicago on this tour, but mostly we're focusing, you know, San Diego, Portland, Seattle, LA, San Francisco, West Coast, and it makes sense for us. So
there's a couple things that are coming up that I want to make sure that I hit on before we have to go, and that is that you were pregnant during your entire tour, right?
Yes.
You were drumming pregnant up until like 9 months. What was that
yeah.
like? Talk about that.
It was amazing. It was
really?
I think the most magical experience. I think pregnant women are magical. I think that there's a baby in there, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I was afraid that, like, people would come up and want to touch my belly, and by the end, I'm like, somebody touch this, there's, like, a child in here, like, come rub this thing, it's moving. It was really cool. Like, most people don't expect me to play the drums anyway, but when you show up pregnant, they really don't expect you to, like, be playing, especially the
right.
drums.
They think you're just a groupie or something.
Yeah.
Like,
nobody thinks you're there to be performing, and so I like that element of surprise,
mm-hmm.
and I like the fact that my son could be on stage with us throughout. You know, we did 12 countries, we did 60 shows, we really toured hard, and it was, like, there were days where we'd finish playing and I couldn't walk straight in the hotel room.
I bet. You had to lay down.
It was
down
hard, and yeah, but honestly, like, playing the drums invigorates me, and it makes me so happy inside that, like, I think that that's the best thing you can do for your baby is, like, be sending all those good feeling chemicals and energy to him. And, you know, I went to multiple doctors before getting pregnant and made sure that his hearing wouldn't be affected, that he wouldn't be startled by the noise. I wear my in-ear monitors, so instead of the speakers being pointed at me, it's all in headphones. So it's much quieter on stage than it is in the audience. And it was awesome. Like, I wouldn't trade it for the world.
That's such an inspiration to so many women who, you know, it's easy, I think, when you're pregnant to kind of roll into that, oh, I'm pregnant, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
I'm just, my life's over for this 9 months. And here you are going, no, I'm inviting, he's coming into our world and we're going to take him along for the journey. And we always did that with our son too. Although my mom said that Tucker was safer out of the womb than in the womb, because I had so many things happen while I was pregnant. But we did that same thing. We're like, no, you're coming into our world. You're going to be on a fishing boat 40 miles off sea, you know, off the coast. And he's such a go-anywhere kid now. It's awesome because of that. So how did he kick a lot? Like, when you were playing? I mean,
yeah, he would. Well, he would. The funny part is, so we'd normally play at 10 p.m. every night. And on the nights that we weren't playing, then he'd be like kicking at 10 p.m. like, I'm here, you know. And
little drummer in there.
Yeah. And he loves drumming. He loves music. He loves to dance. So it's really, like, it's pretty awesome. Like, I think that it helped create, hopefully, the person that he will be. And I wanted to, like, print up a map of all those countries we toured. And on his 18th birthday, like, you're going back by yourself now, kid. Like, here's a backpack and you've got to go and recreate the tour, but just go and do it for fun. So, but who knows? He could want to be like an accountant or something,
right?
And be like, I just want to be in a quiet environment. But he seems like it's created like a, not high energy, because he's pretty mellow, but like, he loves music.
Yeah. And so you guys are going to take him along. What's his name?
Rocco.
And you're going to take him along on the tour.
He will come to some of the tour dates. We are doing it where he won't have to make the incredibly long drives, but he's coming with us to Montana. He's already, I think, flown 24 times.
Wow.
So he's a year and a half, and we've brought him to shows in Vegas and DC and Arizona and Colorado.
He stays backstage in the green room?
Yeah, he'll stay in the green room, or if we bring family and it's late, he'll go and go to sleep because he still has his schedule. But he's been able to see a few shows, and we show him music videos, and he knows that's mom and dad. And
so will it be pretty big venues, or will they be more intimate venues?
So this tour is pretty small venues. We're trying, like I said, to focus on this West Coast and hopefully sell out the whole tour, and then next year come back and do the same thing, and then really build through the internet, because conventional touring is so wasteful.
Yeah.
It's wasteful with gas. It's wasteful with energy. Like, if you see a band that's from the West Coast and you're seeing them on the East Coast, it's like, yeah, you sing them for 90 minutes and you're not realizing the, like, months of planning it took.
Right.
And then, like, the just how much waste there is to get there. And so we're trying to focus more with, we've created a lot of new videos and a lot of new content for the internet. So hopefully that will spread.
And so how we kind of reconnected is so wild to me. I mean, just synchronicity in general in life. I feel like you have to listen to it when it happens. But you came to my January workshop.
Yeah.
And for Be You Find Happy, and I knew you looked familiar, but it's a small town, and I thought, oh, you know, I've seen her out and about or whatever. And then when you came back in April for the next workshop, and it was more work oriented, and you talked about what you did, and it just immediately, I knew you were the drummer for Little Hurricane. I just knew, and that's why I said, you know, what is the name of the band? And it's, I was like, I knew it right then. I just knew it. And so you know, a lot of people, I called everybody after that workshop. I'm like, you'll never believe it was in my workshop. So, but what was crazy to me is that you guys wound up here.
Yeah.
How did that happen? How did you decide to leave San Diego?
Well, we had gone on that tour, you know, and we had left San Diego a few years prior, trying to move closer to Santa Cruz, which is where my husband's family lives. And then while I was pregnant, we were touring, and we lived in Tahoe for a while. In between, because we always want to live somewhere beautiful and scenic, and San Diego is like the most beautiful and scenic, but Tahoe is pretty great. And while I was pregnant, we toured all the way. So my son was born in October, and by September, we're like, okay, we need a place to live.
We're gonna need, like, somewhere to
now
settle.
We're about to have this baby, and so we found a house up here, which you know, this is kind of like a little pocket where it's super affordable. And we were able to get 2.5 acres and have enough space where we can record at home, because that would be the problem living in San Diego, to have a kid and we record at home. So you can't be in like a cute little craftsman house in North Park like we'd love to be, because the neighbors are going to just be, you know, like super frustrated if you're recording all day.
Sure.
So we found the space out here and it was close enough to Santa Cruz, because Santa Cruz is just crazy expensive right now.
Sure.
And we actually found the house right before we left for Europe, and we put an offer in and we signed all the papers while we were in Europe and came back, and we moved right in right before he was born. So
that was pretty synchronistic too then. It all worked out.
We found a house that we could move into, because, you know, you look at houses and our budget was pretty limited and most of them need a new foundation or a new roof and you need tons of work. And we found this cute little house on 2.5 acres that we could just move right in, and it was perfect. So
then you guys had to buy a bed. And a chair and a couch.
All the stuff we need,
And so do you enjoy both? Do you like being home, or do you enjoy more being on the road and that kind of lifestyle?
I love being on the road, but I would not trade like kid time for stage time at any point. That's like the greatest benefit to having this job is my son is 18 months old and we've been able to both stay home with him. You know, we've been touring, you know, I think we did like 25 dates last year, so it's not that much compared to if I had to go work a 9-to-5 and leave him. And like, we love being parents, and you know, it's a scary step to make, like, okay, you know, we're musicians, and like through that we've gotten some of gotten rid of, some have been dropped, but from, we don't have a record label, we don't have an agent, we don't have a manager, we have a UK agent, but we don't have all of the same things that we've had with the last 3 or 4 releases that we've done. We've had a whole team of people, and you put out a record and you get a big advance from the record label, and they fund all the marketing and publicity, and this time it's very different. We're borrowing against our life insurance, and we're doing it through our own record label, and we're doing it exactly how we want. And it's definitely not traditional in this industry to just be like, we're gonna, you know, the last manager we had, we said we want to fund our own record instead of sign with the record label, and he literally laughed and said, I would never let you do that.
Wow.
But we're a small business, and like any other small business, we need inventory, and in order to get that inventory we have to take out a small loan, and we think that it will pay off. So
wow, I am so excited for you guys.
I'm excited too.
So Danny, my brother-in-law, is coming down with his girlfriend on August 17th. Can we announce that?
Oh yeah, sure.
Okay, on August 17th to Marcos in Coloma.
That's a great little local venue.
It is, and I feel so like honored that you're going to be playing in this town, and I know it's going to be packed because I have been singing your guys' praises for like weeks, but we're really excited to hear your new album and support you guys. And
thank you.
I just think you're such an inspiration. Like, everything that you guys have done and your journey to get here and how you've really stayed true to who you guys are. And I mean, that's really powerful message that definitely needs to be heard. And I'm so glad that you shared it today.
Oh, thank you. I'm really inspired by you. And like, after I did the first workshop, I was like, wow, the like instructor was really cool. Like, would it be weird to be like, can we be friends? But like, everybody wants your attention because they're all there to like get some sort of help, you know? And then, so I was glad that you like knew about the band and we could do this, because the workshops are really helpful.
Thank you. I have a feeling that it's going to go big for you guys. I do. And I think what's really awesome is that I don't think you guys are going to be a bit different. I think you're just going to be who you are. And that's so awesome. Like, I can't wait for that for you guys.
I hope so. And even if that doesn't happen, it's still like, following my dreams has been the best like life story I could have ever written. So I'm happy where it is. But those kind of stories are great to hear, because everyone plays those shows where there's hardly anyone there.
Yeah.
And you kind of tell yourself like, well, for those people that are there one day, they're going to go and say, I saw them in front of nobody. And, you know, so it's great to hear those kind of stories.
Yeah, for sure. And then if all else fails, we definitely need another restaurant up here. So so you could do that.
That's true.
So thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having
me. I'm so stoked. And we can't wait to hear you guys on the
17th. That'll be fun at Marcos. It's a different kind of show. Like, we have to bring our own sound system, and you know, like, it's fun.
This has been a BU Find Happy podcast. For more inspiration, check out our links.
Whoa, is that?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.